Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, I feel like it's gloomy everywhere we are today, even in our own emotions. So Ron is back off the road. I can hear the sadness in his voice at being at home. And Pipe, you and I are where it's raining so heavily that we're considering like just making arcs out of our houses and floating away. So a little gloom today, boys. But you know what makes me not gloomy is thinking about all the sponsor money that's flowing our way because of all the sponsors we have. So Piper, why don't you tell us about who some of those people are?
There are so many sponsors. And before the listeners tune out, I'm gonna give them our new sponsor because I know the listeners tune out for this stuff. So our newest sponsor is IVP Books, with particularly the title Disruptive Witness by Alan Noble. I actually read this book. He asked me to endorse it. I don't know if they used the endorsement or not. I said nice things, so I hope they did. But it's a really, really good book. So it's a book about essentially overcoming the distractions of the flood of digital everything in our lives. So he has this great excerpt in chapter one where he just basically describes from the minute he wakes up till the minute he goes to bed and how every minute is inundated with something. You know, there's his iPhone is his alarm clock, and then he's watching ESPN while he's making breakfast for the kids, then he's listening to something in the car, then he's checking scores, you know, on his computer while he works, etc. He's a professor like you, Ted, so I feel like you guys should have a little solidarity there. And,
absolutely.
And so, but the thing is, when you read it, you're like, that's exactly like my day. But so the book is about what role should that play in our lives? How is it affecting our witness for Christ? How is it useful to us? How is it harmful to us? How do we even pay attention to it? But it's not like a heavy-handed guilty book, you know, in 12 steps to not let technology take over your life. And it's not one of those books about sort of, you know, becoming Amish or something like that. So he's a really good writer.
It's not a Crossway book then. It's IVP.
Yes. Nor is it one of those, you know, it's not like one of those escape it all, move to Central Pennsylvania or Central Ohio. Not that there's anything wrong with Central Ohio, Ron.
Absolutely.
Jeez.
Sorry. Dude, Central Ohio is where Ron spends 3 weeks every year.
But it's a book about distractions and generally more of a book about paying attention, though, like paying attention to who we are supposed to be, what is the influence on us. So the book is Disruptive Witness. The author is Alan Noble. He's also a fun follow on Twitter. He's a big NBA fan. So I have lots of fun making fun of Russell Westbrook to him because he's an Oklahoma Thunder fan. So he's a good hang. He's a good read, and the book is really helpful, really thoughtful, and very timely. Go pick it up, Disruptive Witness from IVP.
I have a question. A question, real quick, man.
Fire away,
dude. I don't really get the title. I get what's the witness part.
I'm with you, Ron.
Okay,
yeah, suss that out, Pipe.
Yeah. You know what? I have something here with the question asked of the author is, why is your book titled Disruptive Witness? Is that what you're asking, Ron?
I think so.
Oh, okay. It's one of those Q&A sheets that comes with the promo copy, right?
You know what? This publisher provided me with gold on this stuff because it wasn't hey, here's a paragraph of copy. Like, here's an excerpt. Here's stuff that the author says about his own book. So this is Alan Noble's words on why the book is titled that. I'll just read it because he's smarter than me. Every Christian is called to bear witness to their faith, to give a ready answer for the hope within us. But how we bear that witness is determined by the needs of our time. This book tries to evaluate the particular challenges to bearing faith in a contemporary world. Specifically, I consider the way secularism and technology, the technology of distraction, create barriers to belief for most modern people. These barriers are not usually overcome with better arguments, but by offering and here's the key word, disruptive witness, one that unsettles the listener's assumptions about God and encourages them to be contemplative rather than distracted. So it's disrupting the norm. So that's the idea, is to offer a witness that disrupts and rattles sort of the normal, mundane way of going about things.
Wow. Dude, a little above and beyond promo for this. So there's like one guy on our campus, faculty wise, that I'm like semi intimidated by. He's like this really impressive, like philosophy prof. He does like bioethics, and he's a really good dude too. Just like a really amazing dude. He's a little bit older than me, probably maybe 20 years older. But I was in his office the other day feeling a little bit nervous, like chatting with him. And he had this book on his desk, and it registered to me like, oh, like I semi kind of know that author. And that's pretty impressive that he made it to Dr. Ben Mitchell's desk. So tip of the distressed hipster cap to you, Alan Noble. And everybody should read the book, because if it's good enough for Ben Mitchell, it's good enough for all of you. Pipe, tell us about our second.
I do feel like Alan Noble deserves one. As we often do, we discuss the aesthetic of the authors of these books. So let me give a quick rundown on this.
Yeah,
he
do that.
He is 100% literature professor.
Okay.
He wears sweater vests under blazers with Argyle ties. And he wears like a newsboy cap, and he has a beard, but not like a lumberjack beard, but like a very full beard that's very nicely trimmed. And he keeps his head shaved because he has male pattern baldness. So he is fully into the aesthetic of literature professor. My understanding is he's also a really good professor too.
Would I hate him if we taught at the same college? Would he be like nemesis territory for me?
Oh, no. He's totally unassuming, cool to hang out with.
Nice.
He would be the kind of guy you would pop by his office to chat, and you would just walk in and say something like, I think James Harden should have won the MVP, just to watch his hackles go up, and then you'd have a really fun conversation.
Oh, nice. Yeah, very good. Where is he a professor at?
Oklahoma Baptist University, is that right?
Okay.
It's in Oklahoma, and it's a Baptist university, and I think it's Oklahoma Baptist University.
Let's go with that. Let's go with Oklahoma Baptist.
We're going to keep it simple on this one.
Absolutely. I mean, Chad, I would say there might be one or two things that might drive you a little crazy, but I won't mention those on the air.
Dude, really? So you know this gentleman, Ron?
Just from social media.
Okay. Interesting. You won't mention him on the air.
Everybody has the, like, look, if somebody doesn't drive Ted a little nuts, then they're not even human.
Exactly. I just think the thing that, again, man, he's a cool dude. One of the things in particular that drives me a little cuckoo, I think might drive you slightly cuckoo.
That's it. Oh, and you're not going to tell me what it is. You're just saying,
of course,
like,
not, because I like Alan, because he's a cool dude.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So this, just to be clear, this is not like Ronnie talking about Alan Noble this way is not the way Ted talks about Kirk Cousins for our sports listeners. This isn't like an ugly backstory. This is just like a quirky thing.
It's not a nemesis situation. No,
certainly not.
All right. Dude, I'm going to pull up his Twitter feed and see if I can ascertain what you're talking about. I'll do that while Piper's giving the second promo read.
And the then second I'll promo, back. We can hit hard and fast, unlike the way the Vikings hit the Bills last week.
Why don't we just keep talking about Alan Noble the rest of the...
True.
Like that guy from Florida with the mansions.
He's no Frank McKinney. He doesn't
Frank
deserve
McKinney,
that much time.
Frank McKinney, thank you. I always forget his name.
It's hard to remember a name like Frank McKinney. It sounds, it sounds like your plumber. So our second sponsor is Noah's Event Venues. We've had them on for a few weeks. We will have them for a few more. So if you already know all the spiel, skip forward a minute or two, although you're going to miss Ted trolling Twitter. So maybe you don't want to do that. Cool. So Noah's Event Venue is a company that has multiple venues across the country, most major metro areas, that they will rent out for events, but they have a specific service for churches looking for a place to meet, church plants, churches starting new campuses, churches looking to expand or move. And it's kind of an all things included. So they include all of your audiovisual needs. They have all your chairs. They have classroom space. They have areas for childcare that are, set up with good setup for safety and check-in and all those things. They have parking lots, which Ronnie struggled to comprehend a couple weeks ago. But that's a place where one can park cars, probably also fix gear bicycles. They might even have places to plug in your electric car if you're so inclined. But if you go to noaeventvenue.com/church, you can check it all out, find out pricing, find out where they're located. But if you're in a church that's looking for a new location to meet, check them out. noaeventvenue.com/church. Back to you, Ted. What did you ascertain from the Twitter feed?
Okay, I've got a couple things. So I'm going to say what I think they are, and Ron, you can respond however you would like. But
I'll respond off air.
Yeah, so it's either the political stuff, Okay, no reaction.
Boy, really off air. All the way.
Yeah, really, really off air. He was serious about that. It's the political stuff or the like self-promoting like retweets of nice things that people have said about him on the internet. Am I in the ballpark, Ron? Just give me like a yes or a no.
Two coughs is yes.
Yeah, no cough coughs, twice for yes.
No coughs is no.
Cough twice if I'm in the ballpark. Political and or self-promotional retweets.
Baby, I'm doing something with my thumb right now, so I'll let you know which way I pointed it up or down off the air.
Okay, text me. Text me.
This is like a double secret passcode.
Dude, this is so secret. Also, like, are we a fan of that book cover? I'm looking at the cover of the book.
I am not.
Yeah, I'm not either. But he had nothing to do with that. That's not Alan's fault. That's all the publisher. But anyway, you should still buy the book. Disruptive Witness, IVP. Boys, we should get into our topics. This is one of those apps where like the promo reads are engulfing the episode itself. Piper's promo reads are such a main event that like I feel like we don't even need a show at this point. It could just be all commercials.
Just do a promo episode.
Yeah, we can just do all promos. But I want to talk about other tweets, Piper, because I'm on social media right now. I mean, I'm not on it, but I'm looking at it. And you texted us a tweet thread about people, like pastors, I assume, like Reformed pastors, going ahead and like changing the words to worship songs to make them more theologically correct.
Right.
And I just wondered what you guys think of this. Like, there's a part of me that thinks, even if a song is crappy, you shouldn't change the lyrics because you didn't write them to begin with and it's not your song. But the like 10% of me that is an arrogant Reformed douche thinks like it's okay that they changed the wording. So I want to get wisdom from you gentlemen.
So to help listeners understand, just to kind of get you in the headspace of what we're talking about, I have here a tweet by an unnamed Reformed pastor who I actually had dinner with a couple nights ago, who's a really cool guy. But he does the thing that kind of drives me nuts. So
yeah.
He says there's a song called "What a Beautiful Name." Ted, if you do it, you could sing it for us. I know you'd be up for that. But
I don't know it, or I would sing it. I
they probably don't sing it at your church because it doesn't have 13 verses.
Exactly, it's not the longest thing ever.
Right. And so the original line is, "You don't want heaven without us, so Jesus, you brought heaven down." They change it to, "Heaven was complete without us, but Jesus, you brought heaven down." So that's their modification of the line, because typical of all Reformed people, anything that implies that God really likes us must be looked at with side eye.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes, that we must look askance at God desiring to spend time with humans.
Dude, I don't know about you, Pi, but like I would love to be a fly on the wall in these meetings where the first guy brings it up like, well, actually, Reformed guys are the ultimate well, actually, guys. They've made a profession out of being well, actually, guys. And I would just love to be in that like meeting that would probably include like the worship pastor, the main pastor, maybe a couple of socias. And they're going around the table looking at these lyrics going, yeah, I just have some real concerns. You know,
here's the way I envision it. So I didn't even picture a meeting about the lyrics. I pictured like a service planning meeting where, you know, the worship pastors, you know, the preacher's like, we're going to go through this text because, you know, it's going to be half of a verse. It's part of a 7,000 part series on the Gospel of Mark. And the worship leader goes, great, good to know the verse, kind of what's your sermon outline, picks the songs. Here's the songs that we're thinking about doing. They fit in this way. Pastor looks at the songs and goes, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then like 45 minutes before service, pastor goes to the guy who's running
the PowerPoint guy.
The pro presenter. Yeah, the guy who's running the slides and says, hey, you need to swap out slide number 3 that we just made a modification to that song. Worship pastor doesn't even know. Like that's
Dude,
just
see, I envision like the arrogant Reformed pastor doing like 90s movie computer hacking. And he like hacks into the PowerPoint feed and like changes the lyrics himself.
Just changes it.
He's got some empty canisters.
Like, it's like Ferris Bueller fixing his absences or something.
Exactly. He's got some like empty Chinese takeout containers around him, and it's dark, and you can see the reflection of like the 90s like green computer screen on his face, and he's just changing those lyrics right and left. You know, Ron, you're the only one ostensibly. I don't know what your background is, Piper, but I can say without question that I've never written a song. And Piper, you've probably never written a song. Ron has written.
I never have. I too have modified lyrics to songs, but not for such a wholesome purpose.
Yeah, I've done it just for humorous purposes. But Big R, you've written actual songs. How tweaked would you be if somebody like manipulated the lyrics to one of your songs?
Oh, dude, man, I literally could care less. I mean,
really?
Yeah, they could do whatever they want to my songs. Yeah,
I don't. So Ron's songs are basically, they're like the Wikipedia of songs. They're open source songs.
Totally, totally.
Yeah,
I just want you to sing them. You can do whatever you want with them. Just sing them.
Oh man. That opens up a world of possibilities, Piper.
It does.
Does it have anything, like, does the motivation behind it matter? You know, are they look at it and they go, ugh, this could be so much better, or, ugh, what a heretic. You know, does that, like, that wouldn't chap your hide at all?
Well, okay, so if it was like a worship song, I don't know. I haven't released any worship songs yet, so I haven't had that experience with that. But no, even then, I wouldn't care. I literally wouldn't care. I've just never cared about stuff like that.
See, really? my problem with stuff like this is that the only instances I can think of course, this is because I'm in the world of white reformdom, is white reform people taking lyrics that have perfectly acceptable theology that you can look at and go, I totally understand what that means. That's cool. And changing it to be something that's like the 13th point of Calvinism or something. You know, it's just they get so particular about it. Like the idea you didn't want heaven without us, so Jesus, you brought heaven down. Like, that's not incorrect.
Yeah.
If God had wanted heaven without us, he wouldn't have sent Jesus down. So that line is correct. So
just it's a bad line anyway, though. It's like, that's not a great line.
No, well, yes,
it's a cheesy line anyway.
Yeah.
Now Ron's onto the thing that if you're going to rewrite a song, fix the poetry. Like
fix the cheesiness.
Like half of the Sovereign Grace songs out there should be rewritten so that the lyrics fit the meter. But but that's a separate issue. That's an artistry issue, not a theology issue. They're talking about, like, you know, we thought it was open to interpretation, so we decided to fine tune it so that it was like sledgehammer lyrics could not be misinterpreted no matter what.
Okay, so I would take offense to that. So here's the thing. So I don't, anybody could do whatever they want to my song. It doesn't mean I would like them, right?
Yeah.
So if I was ever sitting in a church, one of my songs popped up and like the chorus was like edited, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, at least they're singing my song. It doesn't mean that I would like, because I would look at the guy and I would think, oh, you're that guy. You're that guy that fine-tooth combed this thing to the point of taking a lyric that I would consider to be orthodox, but it didn't fit the agenda, right?
Yeah.
But like, so from my standpoint though, man, I just would never do that. I just wouldn't play the song if I didn't like the lyric. Like, I would never imagine to change the lyric. I would just be like, oh, I just don't want to do that song. Like, I wouldn't like think, oh, it's open. It's like open source for like editing and reinterpretation. I would never think that.
Dude, so what is it about the reformed guy mindset that thinks it's perfectly fine for me to change the lyrics to a song that somebody else wrote? Like, what's going on there?
Because they, again, okay, let's open the can of worms. Because again, it's like, because it's a song, and it goes all the way, you know, it kind of takes us through the last couple of decades where music in general, just people don't think they should have to pay for it. People think that they can edit it. They don't really view it as being like an artistic.
They have a low view of it.
They have a
low view of it. Yeah, a reformed pastor wouldn't like hack into another reformed pastor's bloviating white paper and like change paragraphs. You know?
Right. I mean, you wouldn't You wouldn't like.
They would write their own bloviating white paper in response.
That's true. Of course.
But I mean, you wouldn't take somebody's like painting, hang it up in your church, grab some brushes and go, I don't like that shade of blue. Let me darken that up a little bit.
The guy in that painting needs a mustache. You know, he would look better with a mustache.
So it's just weird though with music though, for some reason, because people are reinterpreting music. Yeah. And maybe that's what it is, because what you're doing is when you're playing a song, you're not playing it exactly how it was written.
Is it even legal to do this? Like, you know, there's like the CCLI. Like when churches use songs written by somebody else, there's supposed to be money changing hands. And, you know,
mechanical royalties,
Like just royalties, et cetera. Is it even legal to do this? I don't know how that works.
I think as long as you give the artist, at the end of the day, if the artist gets credit and they get their money, and you have a lyric on a screen that's not being republished or sold for profit, it probably doesn't matter.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm shooting in the dark, but I think that's probably accurate.
I will say for this song, that's the only bad line in the song. And by bad, I mean artistically clunky and apparently not up to reformed snuff theologically. But the rest of the song is pretty fantastic. That it, I don't know. I just looked at it. This example stood out to me because I was like, you changed something that was meh to, you know, to fit a distinct theological framework. You didn't change like heresy to orthodoxy for the sake of a song. And I don't think most Reformed people would do that. I think they would generally be like, yeah, that's heresy. We don't sing that, you know?
Well, dude, what about, okay, so let's just bring it now. Let's just drop it down another rung, man. So like, what if somebody like quoted one of you guys during their sermon and they took like a paragraph and they rewrote like one of the sentences because they didn't like it? From one of your books. Funny. Like, you would just think, like, that's outrageous. Like,
my dad built an entire theology about doing that to the Westminster Confession of Faith, so.
So I guess it doesn't matter then.
It runs in the family for Piper.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
like, the opening comment, didn't he? Changed like a word, right?
So yeah, what was it? It was the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. And he changed it to glorify God by enjoying it forever. Now, granted, he didn't modify the confession, but he just said, you know, basically it would be more accurate if, or it would be, it would be stated better if, and that's, I don't know. I mean, people do that all the time. They take a quote and they're like, they modify it to be something else. And again, as long as you're giving the person credit in that case, it's kind of like, it's more just interacting with an idea. The song thing just amuses me mainly because of the, because Reformed people never improve the song. That's what it is. They just sort of theologically, they just point it at this tiny bullseye. That's all they do. They don't really improve the poetry of it. It's just sort of a net neutral move, I think.
Dude, I want to commend this Reformed gentleman for doing one thing though. He didn't add another couple verses because I feel like the Reformed answer to everything is just make it longer.
That's another John Piper special. They did that at what was it, the Gospel Coalition Women's Conference, and people got all ticked about it. He wrote two additional verses for Great is Thy Faithfulness?
Great is Thy Faithfulness. Yeah. My worship guy just brought that to the table a few weeks
ago. Dude, don't sing those verses. Me to talk about that for weeks.
Don't sing those verses, and here's why. That's not what the hymn is about. My dad wrote two verses about how we're miserable sinners and God is a great, you know, savior. Uh-huh. Which is perfectly true. That's not what Great is Thy Faithfulness is about when you read it verse by verse.
Let's go on record right now. The son of Johnny P. just said, do not sing my dad's lyrics.
It needs more misery in it, though. To make it truly Reformed, it has to be more
misery. Like, but the verses he wrote are like, they're like sort of, we are lower than dust. We are the scum of the earth. We are the gum on the bottom of your shoe. And great is your faithfulness kind of thing. But that's not the tone or the aim of the hymn, Great is Thy Faith.
I know, that's like the classic, it's like the classic like Thanksgiving turkey praise song, man.
It really is.
Dude, I mean.
Dude, but self-loathing is very much at the core of everything that we're about as Reformed men. It has to be.
Well, even this lyric change, heaven was complete without us, but you brought heaven down, is like, we didn't have any place there. We do not matter. Again, there's theologically, I would agree with this line as well as the verses that my dad wrote. I'm just not sure it's the time or place.
Right. And, well, Piper, maybe the time or place is the garment industry, the fashion industry, which we are a part of now. I don't know if our audience knows this, but we are fashion tycoons in that we have our very own missional wear, Happy Rant clothing and apparel line. So if you visit missionalwear.com.
It is a line of one style of t-shirt.
That's right. By a line, it's very minimalist. I mean, one style of t-shirt with one logo. We have lots of other ancillary products. You know, they can get a pint glass to drink all manner of non-alcoholic beverages from. They can get coasters. What else do we have? We have Moleskine journals.
There are stickers.
Toddler-sized Yeti tumblers. Gigantic. Yes.
There are two sizes of Yeti Tumblr. There's the I want a bucket of something, and then there's the I want half a bucket of something. Let's see. I think we mentioned there are a variety of ceramic mugs. There might be a couple other things thrown in there. I can't keep track of all of it. There's just it's an extensive line of swag.
Yeah. These are products that you cannot edit. So when you buy Half Brand products, you get them home, and you don't get to change anything about it. You don't get to change the name of our podcast.
It's not like a hymn that's existed for 4,000 years.
You have to own it. You have to enjoy it for what it is.
It's not like Great Is Thy Faithfulness, which really is just open to additions and subtractions.
But you wear a Happy Rant t-shirt to TGC Women's Conference, man. You just wear it as is.
That's right. Yeah, you really do. But there's another thing that you could wear to TGC Women's Conferences, boys. And that is Destiny Truth Pants. So, Piper, you sent us the link to a story. And the story is about a church that I wasn't familiar with. So you're going to have to, like, lay this on us. And I know Ron is not up to speed on this show prep-wise. But they are using Christian-y tarot cards. And they now have Christian-y tarot card stretch pants, which just seems astonishing to me. So, Piper, lay a bit of this on us.
Yeah, so the church is Bethel Church, which I'm only vaguely familiar with. But Bethel does two things that they're well known for. One is they're sort of in the Hillsong arena when it comes to like creating worship music, and apparently they've done some great songs, and then just qualitatively they put out some really good stuff. So there's that side of things. But then on the theology side, they're just a little sort of crazy prophetic, outside the bounds of what any of our listeners would be comfortable with, and not just the Reformed people. So, here's the title of the article is Bethel, Stretching the Truth with Destiny Pants. Nice. So let me just read a few sentences. So, Ron, this is going to be your introduction to both Bethel and Destiny Pants and probably a number of other concepts that you've never given any consideration to.
Sweet.
So, here we go. Recently, Bethel pastor and Christ Alignment tarot reader extraordinaire Teresa Dedman came...
That's a thing.
Yeah, hang in there. It gets better. Teresa Dedman came out in defense of Destiny tarot card readings. Many Christians are rightly exposing Dedman's Bible twisting to justify her occultic tarot card practices. Her bizarre meanderings in defense of her Destiny card divination practices are just as frivolous as her Destiny pants? This is not satire. All right, now here is the description of Destiny pants, Ron. So, hold on. Does your fashion release the love of God? Do your pants enhance awareness of God's presence or give people heavenly encounters? If your clothes are not doing this, then you need Teresa Dedman's Destiny pants.
Ron's pants may do that, though.
Do Ron's pants give people heavenly encounters? I feel like that's the thing. Given the number of fallen leaders, we try not to give people encounters with our pants. Isn't that how
my gosh? True. I mean, I got to be Alan Noble silent on this one, and I just can't say anything.
Oh, come on. So.
Dude, it's like old Ron. It's like old politic Ron today.
Yeah.
Dude, ask my wife about my pants. That's all I have to say.
I didn't bring up the stuff that's gotten you texted before. You should be fine.
Exactly.
I want to know what Christ Alignment Tarot Reader Extraordinaire means. That.
Oh, man. Yeah. So many questions at this point.
Dude, that is playing so fast and loose, man. I mean, that's just like Christian witchcraft. Like, is that what's popping out? Seriously, it's like, no, dude, we found a way to redeem witchcraft.
Yep.
Yeah, like the death tarot card is Christ on the cross or something like that.
Right.
It's actually Frank McKinney on the cross.
it's the other thief.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, that's just insane, man. Christian witchcraft. I always dreamt that maybe someday somebody would come up some possible way to redeem witchcraft, because I've always just had a passing fancy for it, but now I feel like I found it. Thank you.
Passing fancy. You know what? Yeah, now you can really indulge that.
So I was digging a little deeper into what exactly are Destiny pants, and they have a number of their products listed here with descriptions. Would you guys care to hear some of them?
Dude, absolutely.
So they have a Dancing Waters prophetic art legging. And the prophetic meaning of these pants. So the pants apparently have a prophetic meaning. They're essentially yoga pants that look like they were made by Jackson Pollock. Heaven's reflection mirrors the beauty of dancing colors, where light and shadows play upon the colors of the sky and water. Let this image take you into another place where the eternal touches earth, while these pants hug your legs.
Dude, who takes that seriously, man?
Not us. Not us.
I mean, seriously, like, who reads? I want to talk about, like, who reads that and goes, dude,
yeah,
you know, like, I want,
yeah, that's,
like,
speaking my language.
Like would they take, how do I pay? Like, yeah. Can I go to, can I get this on Amazon? You know, like,
oh, this one takes the cake. The Veins of Glory prophetic art leggings. Like, aren't people usually trying to hide the veins in their legs? So Jesus' blood has won the victory. Stand in agreement with what he paid for and let his glory manifest in your life. These pants are stylish, durable, and a hot fashion staple because that's what Jesus died for. These leggings are made of a comfortable microfiber yarn. Who wants yarn pants? And they'll never lose their stretch. So the Veins of Glory pants are so that you can live in the glory of Christ in hot, stylish, tight pants.
Yeah. Wow. Man, all these years we've just been... You know, we've just been walking around in pants. Ignorant. We've been ignorant.
Selling moleskins and t-shirts. This is where we've went wrong, guys.
Dude, so Bethel's gone Christian witchcraft, man. I want to talk about that, man. Bethel Music has literally gone, like, redemptive witchcraft.
Dude, who is this Bethel Music? Like, how seriously do we take them?
Oh, dude, well, Bethel's huge, man. Yes. So Bethel like, Music up there with Hillsong. Yeah, it's massive.
It's, wow. It's one of the two – it's like – they're probably one of the two biggest contemporary worship sort of producers out there in terms of just sort of contemporary worship music.
And they don't have anybody in their operation to shut this down, to say, you know what, we're not going to do Christian tarot stretch pants. That's a hard no.
Well, it seems weird, man, because it's like, I wonder, I mean, I hate even saying this, but I wonder if it's like been something sort of like quasi-successful, which is why it hasn't gotten shut down.
Well, there's always been a disconnect. I mean, what you're touching on now is something that you see all over the place. Like Elevation Church, where our favorite Stephen Furtick is pastor, they put out some amazing worship stuff. We know for a fact there's not that much amazing coming out of the pulpit. And same thing at Hillsong, by and large. The same thing at Bethel. I mean, Bethel is like way off. Like, they're off the deep end. But somehow maybe it's just what works, but like what works in worship generally falls in the realm of orthodoxy. Apparently what works in the pulpit,
you can go
anywhere.
It's so true though, because like Bethel makes Hillsong look practically reformed. You know what I mean? Like in terms of like their theology.
Right.
So it's kind of crazy, but like, that's another thing, man, because like, why do we, maybe I'm rabbiting here, but like, it's funny that like, we're okay. And I think Bobby Kay actually wrote about this a few weeks ago. But like this,
Bobby. Question,
yeah, Bobby.
BK. Bobby so, K. Is that Bobby Knight?
Yeah, Bobby Knight.
I wasn't aware that he was now writing for Gospel Coalition. That's cool.
But he, but like this whole, I want to get your guys' take on this, man, because it's kind of a weird thing. Like, we're okay with singing some Bethel songs if their lyrics are all legit, but like we'd never, you know, vouch for their theology. Like, why is it okay?
I think because nobody pays attention to where songs come from when we sing them.
Yeah, I agree.
Like it's just, when you sing a song at a church, pretty much people are like, the worship leader led us in a song. So the song is just sort of a standalone thing, which is probably also why people think they can jack around the lyrics on songs. But like it's our thing. In a corporate worship context, it's not anybody else's thing. So yeah, they wrote it, they produced it, they sold it. But once we bought it and we sing it, you know, we can change the tune, we can change the tempo, we can change the lyrics, and nobody really cares where it came from, unless it's a really, really well-known individual. Like people might peg a Chris Tomlin song or something, but in general, I don't even think people think about it.
Yeah. Man, this is crazy. It just it opens up a world of possibilities, I think. Don't you guys think that in the Reformed world, especially in the world of like Reformed women's fashion, we would eschew the idea of stretch pants anyway?
These are yoga pants, which is and leggings, which are
dude. Reformed ladies aren't walking around in yoga pants. I'm sorry, not a thing, right?
Oh, absolutely they are, but they're also getting frowned at by many others. But
that's true.
the very style of pants was a big enough issue a couple years ago where there was like an article written in Christianity Today about sort of should women be wearing these. And that's not the Gospel Coalition. Really? That's Christianity Today, which is like evangelical neutral.
That's amazing. Wow. I can't believe they did a yoga pants piece, man. That's fascinating.
It was a bad month, man. They were short on material, Big T.
But you know what? But you know how many clicks that thing got?
Oh, I bet.
I mean,
it was a huge most clicks.
It was a huge traffic driver.
Yeah, for sure.
I want Joe Carter to write 9 reasons why, you know, Destiny pants are evil, and have the first 4 of them can be mostly about just yoga pants themselves. I just want him to wade into these waters. That would make me so
yoga,
happy.
Well, it would actually just be an article on yoga pipe. I mean, that would be the gist. Yeah,
yoga is demonic would be point 1. Yoga pants are demonic. That would be point 2. Don't believe in Destiny. Point 3.
Yeah.
This is such a great description. I'm just scrolling this article about Destiny pants. Just I'm enthralled.
Dude, who does their marketing copy? That's who we need to like partner with.
I know. I want people to have a prophetic encounter with sarcasm or something like that. But they call this a walking encounter of heaven's message to those around you. That's what these pants bring.
Wow.
A walking encounter of heaven's message to those around you.
That's really solid. You know, that's really, really solid.
Is this just like the new Lord's Gym t-shirt? You know, like totally. I get to witness without totally. Saying anything. And
was
in
Lord's
the process,
Gym a
Bethel I get to show
product?
Off my nice glutes.
I mean, was that actually a Bethel? I mean, what product was the Lord's Gym t-shirt series? That's what I want to know.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like was that a Bethel product, Lord's Gym?
Oh, no. I mean, that's from like when I was a kid. You know, it was like all the Christian t-shirts that were, they showed like a ripped Jesus doing push-ups with a cross on his back and it said Lord's Gym and stuff like that. It was ones where you could sort of, the idea was you can be a witness without ever saying anything because your shirt will do the talking for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I had one of those.
So did I.
Lord's Gym, it led a lot of people to the Lord, guys.
Yeah. Somebody got it for me and I don't think I wore it very much, but,
Think about those. Every time you make fun of them, there's one person who has a story of like the totally. One guy who got saved because he asked about that shirt.
Dude, yeah, and that basically like makes it a thing that we can't make fun of. You know what I mean?
It hadn't stopped us before.
No, it really hasn't stopped us before. To be fair,
the guy's already saved. We're good.
He's already saved.
Here's a question.
Yeah, lay it on us.
Because there is a product that God can potentially use to save somebody, does that justify it as being a product?
Because
God can use anything, right? So, I mean, does that justify it?
Even if the product is otherwise dumb, right?
Of course.
Or just any product.
But if that is the case, I'm going to go hunting for testimonies of all of like just whatever substances people have been high on when they met God and be like, see, they met God while they were doing heroin. Should it be legal? And just see, you know, I feel like that might undermine the premise of the argument a little bit.
That's true. I get what you're like going for there, Bigar, though. Like, does it justify the product? That somebody could like come to know the Lord as a result.
Because I remember, so like back in the 90s, early 2000s, that was like the heyday of all of the tape.
Christian
like,
products.
Yeah, the Burger King logo and like tweak it and put something Christian on it. And they would sell it at all the festivals in the summer that I was playing at, right? And it was just, it was just so embarrassing, you know? And I remember like talking to some of the people that would run the booths and just say, so what, you know, what's the vibe here? Like, what are you guys aiming at? And obviously they're aiming at like selling a lot of t-shirts, but but it was just it got like so distasteful, and even that kind of like just like weirdly, you know, almost like blasphemous and really uncomfortable. Some of the stuff they were retweaking, and you're just like, man, I feel weird about that, and you know, and they're just looking at you all like 7 kids, you know, are you know buying the shirt, and you know, so I don't know.
Yeah,
my favorite all time is the it was a Heineken logo. Except instead of Heineken, it said Him Within, and that was the whole shirt. And that, for me, was sort of the – I mean, that was like the quintessential, okay, this – if there was a question whether or not these were helpful, that sealed the deal that they're definitively not.
Dude, the only one I can
– There's probably some sort of copyright or trademark infringement there too.
Do you guys remember the one that sticks out to me? The only one I can remember is the Budweiser one that was "This Blood's for You."
Yes. Yes. An all-timer.
So bad. I mean, so ridiculous, man.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Boys, we have run out of time. I have to go and I have to coach football. I could talk about 90s Christian products all day, though. And who wouldn't want to do that?
That'd be future episodes.
Well, yeah, we'll have to get to our third hard-hitting topic at a later time.
I think listeners should tweet at us just images of their favorite Christian T-shirts, and maybe we can just sort of sort through them on a future episode. So Christian products, just send us the images via Twitter or Facebook. Either one's great, and we can compile them into future conversations.
I like it, Pipe. I like it a lot. Boys, we have done what we always do in this program. We have wandered to and fro throughout these, to and far, to and fro. How have I been saying it, by the way? To and far, that was Trogue's thing.
Yeah, to and far was because Trogue struggled with phrases. To and fro is correct, and that's how you usually say it.
To and fro is correct, and that's how I usually say it. But yeah, I introduced doubt there for a minute. We've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Rachel the Hell to Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Do you ever hear sayings make their way through the culture and the church that seem nice in theory, but are actually theologically problematic? My name is Shara Donahue, and I'm the host of The Bible Never Said That, a podcast where we examine these popular sayings under the lens of biblical truth. We cover sayings like, God won't give you more than you can handle, time heals all wounds, and follow your heart. We also spend time exploring how people use Bible verses out of context. If you want to grow in discernment and truth, join us and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.